Welcome to another episode of Tirapore, the show that's been proudly bringing you a fan's perspective of all things Sarze Sharks and Sarze Barracuda since 2018. As always, everything heard on this show is 100% my own personal opinion and is not affiliated with either club or the respective leagues. And now it's time for a brand new edition of Tirapore, the podcast made by a fan for the fans. Very warm welcome to episode 3 of Tirapore season 6, which of course is going to be looking back on the month of November. Wow, did we hit a new low. Wow. I'm trying to think back in nearly 15 years of being Bob the Sharks. Have we ever conceded 10 goals? I mean, it's very, very rare in the National Hockey League. It very, very rarely is for dollar figures. But for two back-to-back to start the month? Wow, that's rough. That is rough. And can you believe it? That David Quinn, who is just mouthing off and having a go at the team, has still got a job. It's like, can you believe it? He's still employed! Where's Mike Greer going to get a grip and get a hint to realise that David Quinn is bad for Sarze, eh? I don't know. Anyway, I mean, the positives this month is we got some wins, but those massive losses just stare you in the face. It's always been a bit of a topsy-turvy month for the Barracuda, which we'll be looking back on in this month's edition of the Cooler Corner. And what a West Watch we have got for you today. We're going to be tracking Minnesota Wild's air miles in Stockholm. Oh, Edmonton, who they have had the balls to fire their coach. Just not sure if their new one is okay with his name being used for certain jokes, which we'll come on to later on. And then I was very torn with the last bit. So obviously we've had that raw possession with Prince Harry at the Sharks Canucks game. So I thought should have come up with Vancouver. But of course, no, because that involved us. I'll say it for a little bit. So that's the Tirapore bit. So instead, we have got other royalty mentioned. And it's President Biden meeting the Golden Knights. But who knew Prince Harry at a Sharks game? Who'd have thought it? I've covered all that in a terrible bit, so you can go and check that out on my official YouTube channel. But yeah, but very, very busy episode coming your way. So we'll get started with those first two ugly messes. Alright, it's time to start with the look backs. And a part of me is kind of glad I didn't say, I didn't sing the song, you know, how things can only get better, because let's face it, they didn't. They actually got worse instead of better, as we saw throughout the first part of the month. Okay, so November the 2nd, Vancouver's been a total surprise package this season, and I am loving it. It just means I've got my prediction wrong. We're a month in already for one of our Pacific Division foes. I've realised I've got that prediction a bit wrong there. That will have to be a scratch. We get to our season finale in June. But you know what? I'm loving it. And maybe this year is Vancouver's year. Maybe it's their time. And I would be all for it. I mean, I'm getting bored of Vegas, Edmonton, LA, being the Constantine we talk about in the Pacific. Come on. Let's have Vancouver rise to the challenge and let this be Vancouver's year. So, an inverted high sticking parity saw the Canucks make Sarze pay big time, as the Canucks' two power goals were their first two shots of the game. It's already a bad start there. And they just really never looked back. and they just rode the momentum of that double minor, and it I also really did not like the sequence that obviously resulted in the Canucks' sixth goal, as that saw Kapokakinen get taken out of the game during the second period. Not much really changed. I mean, I could not believe they got 10. I was stunned when it got to 10 goals. I was like, oh my god. What am I saying? A part of me kind of wishes that I had, that this was not a Sharks game. It was somebody else that got scored 10 goals on. Just so I could watch Banker's commentator reactions to that. Wow, I just could not believe what I have just been seeing. I just could not believe my eyes. I really couldn't. And then the next game, it gets worse. You got Pittsburgh coming on number 4. They were at 10-2. Now, really, that first period was one of the Sharks' best so far. They showed intensity, they showed physicality, and plenty of scoring chances. And I think from watching our broadcast, a lot of they had a lot of high praise for the Sharks. They thought it was a great period, despite being, I think it was maybe more 2 goals now. And you would have thought that was then going to be a 10-goal bonanza. I mean, Pittsburgh didn't really look as fast or sharp or fierce as Vancouver did, and yet it's so disappointing that it all just unraveled in that second period, as Pittsburgh just ramped up the ante. They ramped up the firepower in a night where they showed variety, with various players getting points. Their one weakness, though, was discipline. I mean, Saturday's power play was really clicking for a change. Managed to score both those Sharks goals were scored the power play. So the power play started to, it's slowly, bit by bit, improving, which of course is what I want to see. Really interesting. It just shows, that game shows you just can't tell how it's going to go until the final buzzer has sounded. Right, number 7th. Hallelujah! We've won a game in 2023-24! Woo! I think that deserves it. Because you just thought, when's it ever going to come? When's it ever going to come? It's not going to come. It does. Against the Philadelphia Flyers. 2-1. So a closely fought, fiercely tense contest. The Sharks struck first, very early in the game. Courtesy of Anthony DeClaire. He's proved to be quite the firepower for Sarze this season, which is really great to see. They had an excellent strike of the power play. So again, power play doing well here. However, hard work of Mackenzie Blackwood, he was denied his shutout due to a very controversial Flyers goal. Which didn't quite completely cross the, if you've watched the highest back, I don't think that completely crossed the line, you ask me. Now, I am visually impaired. I do have a disability. My eyesight's not great. But for me, that puck didn't quite completely cross the goal line, so I don't think that should have counted. I think Mackenzie Blackwood has been robbed of a shutout, and he's been doing very well with Zaza as well. So, I mean, he'll get a shutout eventually, but just by robbed there, really robbed. Alright, so then moving on to the Edmonton Oilers. Now, what is happening to Edmonton, I do not know. They came to town on the moment of the 9th. First part of a weird back-to-back. We're in San Jose one night, on the road the next. I don't know what's happening to Edmonton, I really don't. And Jay Woodcroft was still on man of the bench at the highest game. I mean, the Oilers just aren't going the right direction right now. I mean, I don't know what's happening to them. And I really do think when we get to the trade deadline, I think Edmonton needs to reconsider letting McDavid and Drysdale go. Now, I know that we're wash with the Edmonton Oilers fans, but I want to ask the Edmonton Oilers fans this. How badly do you want Connor McDavid and Leon Drysdale, two generational players, how badly do you want to see them hoist the Stanley Cup one day? Well, if the answer is yes, you do, then it's not going to happen in Edmonton. Edmonton right now is nowhere near on the cusp of being a Stanley Cup contender. Their best shot came in 2022. And the only reason they didn't make it in 2022 is because in the Conference Finals, they were stacked with injuries and they had a strong, rock-solid Colorado Avalanche. I kind of look back on that year now and think, yeah, Colorado was the worthy champions. Sorry, Tampa, but Colorado in the end actually were worthy. And probably could have been two-time champs as well, but... Well done, recommendation. Yeah, so I think Leon Draisaitl and Colorado need to be moved on to teams that can deliver them that Stanley Cup. And as we'll talk about this game now, so it was a 3-2 victory for the Sharks in regulation. And it's going to be one of the best forms we've seen so far for the Sharks. They were tenacious, aggressive, fired on all cylinders. Getting that puck to the net. Really, really great. As Fabian Zetterlin and Felix Seider showed their worth in Zaza, both getting goals alongside the veteran Tomas Hertl. But the best thing about this game was how they kept Everton's King off the score sheet. Oh yeah, that's right. King McDavid did not record a single point in that game. Queen Draisaitl did. I can't remember what he got a point for, but he did get a point for that. So Leon Draisaitl came away with a point in that game. Connor McDavid, the King, did not. Now, feed and show how bad it is in Edmonton when the King and Queen are racking up points night in, night out. So, the big question for Edmonton is going to be how we get to trade deadline, and that is in the season, probably beginning of March sometime. When we get to trade deadline, what is Edmonton going to do with McDavid Draisaitl? Keep them or move them so they can finally get that cup. We will see. So, but two back-to-back wins. And you know what's really, really disappointing about and what really annoyed me about the next day is because I had a feeling, oh, that win streak's going to get snapped. You know when you go on a nice roll, you go win streak like two or three games and then your next day is a team you know you're not going to get points out of. He's going, oh. Because this winter is going really well. So the next night, we're in Vegas, and another bloody paint job! Oh my bloody god. Season 7 for the Golden Knights, and another paint job. So they've had 7 paint jobs. Well, 8, you can't look at that. They've had more paint jobs than we have had to change broadband providers! It's like, for goodness sake, Labarda! Pick a paint job and stick to it for a decade. Bloody hell. I've got no problem with changing the centralised per anniversary. That's fine. But not change it every single year. Bloody hell. How are you even managed to come up with new designs for that year in, year out? What are you going to like in another 5 years' time? You don't have ideas. Anyway. It was a 5-0 shutout loss. Now, I really didn't know the play that led to that first goal. I kind of felt we were really caught off guard there. And the Knights ran to a hot start. But the Sharks actually did show some promise here with their efficiency in what was a kind of back and forth second period. It was kind of a dull second period. Now, let me tell you, when you're here in England and you're watching this game about the early hours in the morning, you do not want to have a slow back and forth period because the tiredness will kick in and will try to droop your eyes into tightening shut. That's kind of what I felt like. And it'd been a very long day for me as well. I've been up quite early. I could feel the tiredness kicking in, but to try and keep jolting myself. So it was a dull period, it really was. Which is a bit hard for Vegas. They're not really used to having door periods. And I think for me, what killed any opportunity here was that shorthanded goal the Knights got. That for me, in the third period, that for me was the dagger that kind of ended any chances of a comeback. It really did. Honestly. We should we do a sweepstake now to see of whether or not Vegas will change their centralised next year? 50 quid? 100 quid? 250? We'll do 250. 250. Put 250 on the line. Vegas will change their centralised again next year. Put on the line. 250. Raise your bet. Right. Number 12. It's time to go to Anaheim and see the Duckies in our mercy jerseys. Give me a moment. Now, I've seen a few Ducks games in these jerseys already. So, oh my god, they're so gorgeous. And, oh, I'm drooling. Wow. 4-1 loss at Anaheim. The Ducks are really having a good season so far. I mean, it's interesting. I think the Sharks could learn a thing or two from Anaheim, because the Ducks have been a rebuild. Haven't been to the playoffs since 2018, which I believe was the year we swept them in the first round. Yes, it was. Haven't been to the playoffs since 2018. It's been the last 5 years to do a rebuild, and only now is it starting to pay off. Now, I don't think Anaheim will be a top three team, but in the Pacific. But I would not be surprised if come the end of April, the Ducks sneak in as a wild card team. And I think they will have earned it. Because they're showing for me Anaheim, when I'm watching Anaheim games, they're showing me they're on the bright trajectory. They're getting there. They're slowly getting there. They're not quite there yet. They're on the cusp. So it would not surprise me if this year Anaheim is a wild card team, and then next year you get the old Ducks back. Yeah, so that's it to keep an eye out during the season. So 4-1 win for the Ducks. A couple of those goals scored by Anaheim, I think Mackenzie Blackwell would like to have back. Both sides had really spectacular goaltending. You know, us Mackenzie Blackwood by letting in 4 goals, and obviously you have John Gibson for Anaheim. But no, that's great. They're stellar. I really loved the play on that line that led to Luke Cullen tying it up 1-1. That was great movement there. But ultimately, it's a penalty kill that shot down. Again, tempers did fray though, as there was a lot of handbags dropped in that game. A lot of handbags. But I think we did see player effort from the Sharks here, especially on those breakaway opportunities. We've got quite a few breakaway opportunities here, but sadly they just couldn't get past John Gibson. And I think John Gibson was the reason why those breakaways did not get converted. Oh, because you imagine they did. What difference that would have made. And then finally on the November 14th, our final match up with the reigning Eastern Conference champions, the Florida Panthers. 5-3 win for them. So, like I was in Sunrise, I personally felt that the Sharks did show effort here. First, with how Mike Hoffman beautifully created that play that led to the equaliser. Also, the power play was on really fine form for a change. Now, Thomas Hurtle get one for the Sharks. However, again, penalty kill got from bad to worse. The Cats, they got hot. Sorry, they got not one, but 2 power play goals. But they did, but as they did successfully initiate a coaches challenge. So they won one well though. But again, did little reach change the outcome. But probably just made the gap more respectable. Because 5-3 actually is a lot more respectable than what could be in 6-4-7-3. Put it that way. So there you go. So it started badly. Then it improved. And it just went back downhill again. It's kind of like this first half of November was kind of like a roller coaster. You go downhill, then you go up again, and then you go tumbling crash back down. Yeah, so milk roller coaster. So we'll see later on how the second half of the look back. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to check in with the West Watch. Alright, it's now time for this month's edition of the West Watch, and once again, all the juicy good stuff in the Eastern Conference! What is going on this season? I mean, if we were an Eastern Conference team, we'd have no problems for stuff to talk about. Oh my word. I mean, that brawl between the Panthers and the Senators, I don't think I've ever heard of a game before where every player gets a penalty. That's unheard of. But of course, we can't talk about that because they're in the Eastern Conference, we're in the Western Conference. Although, very bizarrely, we are starting this edition of the West Watch mentioning Eastern Conference teams because we're starting with a recap of the Minnesota Wild at the Global Series 2023 in Stockholm. Still bizarre that you had three Atlantic Division opponents and you chucked Minnesota in for good measure. I mean, I still think it should have been Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Detroit. You're gonna do it all at that one division, that's how big it should have been. Or do Chicago, Detroit, Montreal, Toronto. That's what you should have done. But anyway, I don't make the decisions on this, okay? The NHL, though, needs to take a leaf out of Major League Baseball's book, okay? Because Major League Baseball does better in deciding who gets to play in the World Series games. No, the World Tour games, I say. Oh, my God. In the World Tour games, so when they go across outside of North America, the MLB World Tour, they are brilliant at choosing who gets to play in those games. They've actually really considered the rivalries over, you know, what makes good telly. Right, so we're going to look back on Minnesota's two games in the Global Series. Their game from... let me just make sure this is right. Yes, the timings, because of course, UK, US, we don't want to be mucked up out. We don't get the times wrong, or dates wrong. Okay, so there are two games, which they played in Stockholm against Ottawa on the 18th of November, and then Toronto on the 19th of November. Minnesota were classed as the home team for the game against Toronto, and the road team against the game Ottawa. Now, the Wild got points in both of these games. They both went to extra hockey, so they managed to please the Swedish crowd there. Whether they wanted extra hockey or not, who knows? They did great work there in giving the fans some extra hockey. Very close games here. So on the 18th of November, they lost 2-1 in a shootout to the Ottawa Senators, and then on the 19th of November, they lost 4-3 in overtime to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the game at Ottawa actually was very close. I mean, we had very tight scoring. Both teams only scored their one goal regulation in one period each. So the Wild actually got the lead. They actually took the lead first. Yeah, they got that lead in the second period. Let's see who got it. Or do I not have that information? Yes, I do. I do. So... okay, I got this right. So yeah, so here we go. So Marco Rossi for the Wild got his sixth of the year at 6-22. That second period to give the Wild the lead. But the Senators would tie it right in that third period. Thanks to. Eric Brännström get his first of the season. What a way to get your first goal of the season in. That's a brilliant way to do it. 3-3 on that third. And then there was nothing until to the shootout. It went quite a distance, actually. So, we're in the shootout. So, you had Stutzel for Ottawa. That was saved. You had Zuccarello for the Wild. That was saved. Then you had Bapperson for the Ottawa, save. You had then Kaprizov for the Minnesota, that was a save. Then Norris for Ottawa got the goal. And then Eriksson Ek was saved for Minnesota. So a really tight shootout there. Ramirez getting the win there. If you look at the other stats, the shots were very close as well. 25 minutes to the 31 on one. The face-offs, though, a massive difference here. Minnesota had 39.6% in terms of face-off percentage, while the Senators a whopping 60.4%. Wow, the Ottawa there just dominating the face-offs. Neither team got on the power play. They both split 13 penalty minutes each. Minnesota did do better on hits. They had 16, while the Senators had 6. Now, in terms of block shots, Minnesota had 22, Ottawa 17. And then giveaways, Minnesota had 6, Ottawa 4. And then and takeaways, Minnesota also had 6, Ottawa had 3. It's a very tightly hit contest there. Both sides filling in it, could have gone either way. So, yeah, right, that went for the whole distance. And then the next one, the second game, Toronto winning 4-3 over the Wild. Toronto led in that first after that first period, and so Minnesota had to use the big third period to make quite the comeback. If we go, I'll go through it quickly. So the Wild got the first goal actually again in Stockholm, get the first goal of the game. Mariel got his first of the year. Another great way to get your first goal of the year. That was at 2-2 over the first period. And then Toronto eventually tied it amongst Matthews for his fourth of the year on the power play at 12.3. And then with 18.23, so not long to go in that period, Nees, with his fifth of the year, makes it 2-1 Toronto. Up in the second, Riley then extends the Toronto lead to 3-1. So you've been by that at 4.22 of the third, for his third of the year. You think at that point Toronto's got a grapple on this, but they start to then make the charge. Mills of his third of the year at 6.10, so roughly 2 minutes after that 3-1 goal, to make it 3-2. And then Zuccarello ties it at 8.42, so just 2 minutes later after that, for his fifth of the year, and you have a tied game. Nylander, for his 12th of the year, would get the overtime winner at 3.09 of the overtime period. If you look at the overall the game stats, so... Ooh, face-off percentage is quite a contrast, but let's do shots on goal. So Toronto had 25, Minnesota 36, so outshots Toronto there. But look at this face percentage again. Toronto 60.9%, Minnesota 39.1%. So the face-offs are not saying Minnesota's been great out here. And that's good to keep an eye on when we next see Minnesota in the season. In terms of percentage of the power play, Toronto could be on 50% of theirs. They got 1 from 2. Minnesota, nothing on 3. Penguins, Toronto had 6. Minnesota, 4. Terms of hits, Minnesota led that department 15-8. They also led in terms of block shots 18-16. Also on giveaways at 6-4. And also on takeaways 7-4. So, 2... tight losses there, but Minnesota, who really are having a real struggle this year, they're not a great season, they really are not. Yeah, but great to see Minnesota there in Stockholm. Still are kind of the lone Western Conference team chosen to play in Stockholm. You had Toronto, Detroit, Ottawa, all Atlantic Division opponents. But of course, I've done a chill bit about that back in the summer about that, so. I did bring the mascots of those teams up, so you can go check that out on my YouTube channel. It's still balmy. They always are balmy, these Global Series matchups. They always are balmy. So we'll have to wait and see. If we go again in 2024, we'll have to see if they are going to be balmy matchups. Right, back on North American soil, we go to the Edmonton Oilers, who are the first to do a firing of their coach. Now, it's quite a surprise how this happened, because this came literally the day after they won Seattle. So was Jay Woodcroft potentially informed beforehand that he was going to be fired? But it feels bizarre. Why did you let a coach go when you've just won the prior game? It's very odd. So the Oilers have had a very, very bad start to their season. I mean, we all probably have had the Oilers as our contenders in the Pacific for the Cup the last few years now. And they've talked about how they need to do something about McDonough and Drysdale to ensure that they can get a Stanley Cup. I still think they should maybe try it. We'll see. But Jay Wilcox has been fired. This came after the back of a 4-1 win at the Seattle Kraken the night prior, but they were at the time 7th in the Pacific Division, with a record of 3-9-1. And they were 2-7-1 in their past 10 games and were 0-4-1 at Rogers Place. Their lone home win, actually, it's not, well, I don't think you can count it a home win because it came off the back of when they hosted the Flames in the Battle of Alberta in the Heritage Series. So can you really class that as a home win? Probably not. So across 3 seasons with the Oilers, he racked a record as a coach, 79-41-13 in 133 regular season games, and was 14-14 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Got the Oilers their best appearance in the Stanley Cup playoffs for quite a while. They were just one round away from a Stanley Cup. We've talked about it before. Right, so I'll forgive you if you are sniggling or laughing or doing any innuendos, because let's face it, I had the exact same thought when I heard who their coach was announced. Their new coach is... Let me find it. It is Chris Knobloch. Yep, yeah, I'll give you a second. I'll give you a second. We'll have a tiny pause. I don't like this because size is near me and brave, but I'll allow a tiny pause for laughter. Back. Wasn't that NHLArts.com article where the headline was Oilers lead on Knob? I was like, no! He's only been the new coach for 5 minutes and already his name's getting taken the mick out of. But I'm sure we're all thinking it. Whenever the Oilers have a bad game now, we can just say about the coach, oh, what a knob. In case I was wondering, yes, I can say that on the podcast. It's not swearing. It's an anatomy. It's a form of anatomy. Although I prefer dick. No, you know what I mean. I prefer the word... If we're not going to use the scientific term, I prefer you refer to it as dick, alright? Okay, it's gone south as I knew it would. Okay, right. Yeah, so Chris Knobloch. What a knob. So next time we see the Oilers, how many Sharks fans are going to make the joke? Because you could. I mean, I'm going to fight very hard when I'm watching it and to resist just the sniggling, because it's just going to be like whenever our broadcast team brings his name up. What a fortunate name that is! Have we found a more unfortunate name than Hunt? Well, probably not. No. Not being more unfortunate than Hunt. But anyway. Okay. So he's 45 years old. He leads an NHL team for the first time ever. He coached the York Rangers AHL affiliates at the Harper Bullpack for the past 4 seasons. Previously, he coached Oilers captain Connor McDavid for 3 seasons with Erie of the Ontario Hockey League, where the forward had 285 points in 166 games. Knobloch's first game came at home against the New York Islanders. Sorry, I can't go on. But oh my god. What an unfortunate surname, mate. What an unfortunate surname in this kind of of business. Because we all know, sports can be cruel. So, I hope he's ready for the onslaught that is going to be... What a knob. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Sorry, I know he can't help what his surname's called. Well, he can, because you could change it. But... Oh my god! Knobloch! Launch the knob! Oh no, that's going a bit too far now. That's going a bit too far. But he just, knob launched! Oh my god! I can only imagine what the Edmonton Oilers fans are thinking right now. Oh my god! Sorry, this is so cold. Oh. And finally, for a little bit of light relief, or maybe that's not the right choice of words, and finally, the Golden Brats are back again. Yep. Now, if you think that President Biden hasn't got enough on his plate at the moment, especially as we have got an upcoming election next year, which is going to be very, very crucial for us Democrats, the last thing he needs is the Golden Brats to turn up at the White House to show off the Stanley Cup. Now, I know this has happened plenty of times in with other sports, but I just think, is that really necessary? You know? And look! The representative with a Golden Brats jersey! The poor thing! He doesn't want to be associated with that! Because him, would probably have to burn that straight away. Oh, no. Well, it's burned. Oh, God. Yeah, so the Knights captain was standing at a podium addressing an audience in the White House, his East Room. Well, that's a first slip up. Western Conference team in the East Room. Is there a West Room in the White House? I don't know. Not into politics. It's not my thing, to quote Doge from Six. So we're President Biden standing only a few feet away. Now, of course, this experience of the Golden Knights will never forget. Being honoured by the President Biden and by Vice President Kamala Harris was there too. She's the lead deceiver. She's got enough on her plate with that divisive Senate. Alright? She's got enough of her plate in her to be the tiebreaker boat. They were both there at the White House honouring the Golden Knights. When's the last time this has happened with the AHL? I'm trying to think, because it's not every year this happens. So when's the last time a team went to the White House? Answer the postcard, please. TillPutPodcast.com. Tell me, who was the last team before the Golden Brats to go visit the White House to celebrate a Stanley Cup win? Answer the postcard. So you had Mark Stone's first time at the White House. You had Ike Pietrangelo there as well. The Blues have been there. Oh, I might have the answer. Ike Pietrangelo was there when he was on with the Blues after they won the Stanley Cup in 2019. It was third time for Alex Martinez, who worked with the LA Kings in 2012-2014. Okay, so maybe the Blues were the last one, because I don't think I remember the Avalanche or the Lightning doing it. But maybe it was the Blues, maybe it was Louis. Who knows? Answer the postcard, please. So President Biden marvelled about how owner Bill Foley and the Golden Knights built their rink in the middle of the desert and won the Stanley Cup in their sixth season after entering the league as a battle team in 2017. And then a brief private meeting with President Biden and Vice President Harris in the state dining room before heading to the East Room for the ceremony, where rejoining them for the day was forward Riley Smith, who was traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the off-season. Former Golden Knights assistant Ryan Craig, who now is the coach of their AHL affiliates, the Silver Horses. Also attending with former head athletic trainer Jay Mertelli, who now works for Foley's Premier League soccer team AFC Bournemouth, and have travelled from England to for the ceremony. So Golden Brats there. Lord again at the White House, but seriously, come on, President Biden and Vice President Harris have got a lot more better things to do than to entertain the Golden Brats. So there you go. I was, but of course, I think we in Vancouver outshine them there, because where does it get bigger than royalty? Okay, he's not a working member of the royal family anymore, but Prince Harry doing the puck drop at your game? I feel like Tom's going to visit the White House. No offence to the President and Vice President, especially, of course, as they are Democratic President and Vice President. So, I've hoist my flag. Yeah, I'm a Democrat. Sue me. I know, but I think you might have been able to guess them, but may as well just lay the cards on the table. I was tempted, should we include that in the West Watch for Vancouver, but because it was part of our game, I thought, no, set up a tour bid. So that is a teleport bid on the East Coast, you can tell out. But yeah, what a very busy and very eventful West Watch. It's now time for this month's edition of Cuda Corner, and I am very pleased to say that this time, whilst the Sharks may not be fulfilling their goals we set for them during this pre-season show, the Barracuda, however, are, which is really, really, you know, really great to see. Finally, our first ever wins over both the Firebirds and the Wranglers. Although the Wranglers fans might argue we've already beaten them. That's in perform back when we were in the Heat. Well, yeah, but that's back when you were in Stockton, not when you were in Calgary. So, meh. Okay? Alright, so now we've got our first win over Calgary, which is great. And also, we saw the Checkers for the very first time since our first ever season back in 2015-16. Still, that's a little bit weird how we've seen a shot Checkers this year, given how they are an Eastern Conference team. They are a really great team. They're always my pick from the East to do well in the Carl Cup playoffs. Yeah, they made their first ever visit to Texas U Arena this month. Not sure how many times I get to say that, but that's lovely. We've still got the return trip to Charlotte coming up. I'm not sure if that's until the new year. I need to double check that, but yeah. So should we start? Let's start. Yeah, a lot of split series this November. A lot of split series where a lot of those being maybe should have got maximum points. The first of those being, of course, the first game of the month, on November 3rd, in Calgary. A 1-0 Wranglers win. I always hate 1-0 scorelines in hockey. It really is dull. What boring. Especially the wrong side of it makes it even more frustrating. And the bad thing is they got 34 saves from rookie netminder Magnus Kroner, but failed to beat Dustin Wolf and would fall 1-0 to the Wranglers on Friday afternoon at the Scotiabank Saddledome. With the win, Wolf, a native of Gilroy, is now 12-0 lifetime against the Sharks' top affiliate. After giving up a goal early in the first, Kroner would proceed to make the next 30 stops, keeping Saturday within a goal for the rest of the way. On the other end, Wolf turned aside all 27 shots he faced and was a key to the Wranglers going 5-for-5 on the penalty kill. The shutout was Wolf's first of the year and his 8th of his career. It opened 20 minutes after a Barracuda natural zone giveaway. Former first rounder Matt Coronato ripped in his first AHL goal in his debut at 4-7. The Barracuda would have a chance to tie the score on a breakaway by Thomas Baudelaire with under 3 minutes to go in the frame, but Wolf denied him with the left pad. In the second, the Barracuda would go on a 5-on-3 power play late in the period for a 4-2 mins, but failed to record a shot, and the game would go into the second intermission with the Wranglers still leading 1-0. Dabagle, Lake the Barracuda, Woodpool, Corona. But failed to level the score, and also the Rangers failed to capitalise on empty net. So, tit for tat there. After the loss to Cuda on our 0-3-3-0, it's lost six games, while the Wranglers have now won 5-0 and sit atop the Pacific Division with 13 points. It's very tight, the Pacific this year. It's not like last year when the Wranglers had a stranglehold on that, and the Firebirds stranglehold on number two. It's wide open this year, so every point is going to count in order to get those top seven spots to guarantee yourself a playoff in the Pacific. Right, November the 5th. Remember, the 5th of November is the Guy Fawkes rhyme. And it will be remembered in our memories as Barracuda fans for many years to come. Remember, the 5th of November, 2023. First ever win of the Calgary Wranglers. Yes. Right, that's a tick. So now it's need to get first win on home soil against Calgary. I'm not sure, have they been? I don't think they've been to us yet, so that's still to come. That's the new goal with both these teams, Calgary and Gretel. Get your first wins on home soil against them. We came close last month with the Firebirds, but right, anyway. Okay, what's this one? 4-1 win, so a more dominant performance here. The Barracuda got 34 saves from rookie Gorton, Georgie Barnard. So the rookies get to make their debuts in Calgary. Really great to see them get some ice time. En route to a 4-1 win over the Calgary Wranglers on Sunday afternoon at the Scotiabank Stadium. With that victory, the Barracuda snapped a six-game skid and ended Calgary's five-game winning streak. The win was also the Barracuda's first on the road and the Wranglers' first loss in regulation and at home. And also, as mentioned, first ever loss to the Barracuda. Runoff has been in the net for both Barracuda wins and has managed to earn his team at least a point in each of his four starts. The loss for Gilroy native Dustin Wolf was his first of the year and his first in 13 career games against San Jose. With 27 seconds remaining in the on the Barracuda's first power play of the night, Brandon Coe was called for a double minor high sticking, while the same was while the game was still 4-on-4. Henry Furon centred the pass to Cole Castellanos as he headed to the net, and the veteran forward directed it through Wolf's 5-hole to open the scoring at 6:50. Ryan Arp stopped all 9 shots he faced in the first, and the game would go into the intermission with the score 1-0 for the Barracuda. The second, the Barracuda were outshot 12-6, but Roanoff made multiple saves, including a point blank a denial on Adam Klapka that kept it at 1-0. And then in the third, hell breaks loose. Barracuda found a way to extend the advantage when Daniel Gustin ripped a shot over the glove off Wolf as he worked down the right wing at 1-0-2. 58 seconds later, Tanner Kaspik snapped a shot from between the circles of the pipe and in to make it 3-0, so I should say. The Wranglers would go on the power play 6 times in this game, including 3 times in the third, and the Barracuda killed them all off. It wasn't until 18:04 that Mitch McLean finally beat the Saturday goaltender off a face-off, but the Barracuda would seal the deal thanks to Radim Chimek, who got the empty netter at 19:36 to cap off the first ever win at the Calgary Wranglers and against the Calgary Wranglers. So still need to wait for that first home victory over the Wranglers. That will come eventually. Right. So from one first to another. So we now have this. We are head back home to host another first time visitor to the Texas Arena. Charlotte Checkers making their first ever visit to Texas Arena. Hopefully it'll be the first of many. I know we're kind of the fifth of the season now. I still feel it's a bit weird how we are seeing the Charlotte Checkers again, given how we are a Western Conference team, they're an Eastern Conference team. For those of you who are new to AHL hockey, the AHL is more about geography, so making sure you don't have to travel as many air miles that you need to. So yeah, so I'm not sure what the distance is between Charlotte and Sarzay, but yeah, we did see them in our first ever season back in 15-16 season, but we haven't seen them since. So yeah, I won't complain. It's nice to welcome new people to the shining jewel of the AHL. Yeah, and of course some of their players will probably be there in February as part representing their division, the All-Star Classic. So get heads spread out, right? Yeah, and of course we will be going back to Charlotte at some point during the season. But let's focus on here and now. So they're a 5-3 win for the Checkers. They're very, as I said, they're a very good side in the Eastern Conference. They're always one of my picks to do well in the East for the Concord playoffs. Of course, they won it all back in 2019. Yes, but the Barracuda led twice on Friday at Texas Arena, but couldn't hold on to the lead and would eventually fall 5-3 to the Charlotte Checkers in their first ever trip to Texas Arena. In the last, Thomas Bordeleau and Jacob Pettersson each collected their first goals of the year. In the first at 6:30, Bordeleau carried the puck down the right wing and beat Spencer Knight on the short side to open the scoring. But at 18:31, Lucas Carlson levelled the score. In the second, Pettersson received a pass from Bordeleau and ripped in a low shot through five hole of Knight to make it 2-1. Barracuda. 7 minutes into the frame, 1 minute 11 seconds later, Ryan McAllister put in the tying goal, and the former Shark, Jonah Gatchbich, tipped in the go-ahead goal and Checkers' first leading eye on the power play at 9:50. Carlson would score again at the 12-minute mark before Ethan Cardwell shoveled in a goal at 30:11. In the third period, Gatchbich would score again and the Checkers would roll to the 5-3 win. Georgiy Romanov would allow 5 goals in 40 shots, suffered his first regulation loss of the year. And then on November the 12th, hold on a sec. Thought I had it loaded up there for a minute. Bear with. Oh no, I've not got the right one. Give me 2 seconds. My oh my. God, there's going to be an awkward silence now, isn't it? Here's me thinking that it all done. Ah, here we go. Got it now. So the 12th American with Cruz part of the Checkers 5-1, a more dominant display there. The Barracuda scored just 1:22 into period 1 on Sunday afternoon at Texas Arena. And never look back. Down the Checkers 5-1. In that victory, defenseman Barry Pooley notched his first AHL goal, and Scott Severin found the back of the net for the first time in a Barracuda jersey. Justin Bailey also scored his team leading 5th of the year, and Thomas Bordeleau made it back to back games with the goal. In the first, Tyler Kaspik put in the Barracuda's first goal of the year just a minute and 22 seconds in the frame as he picked off a Checkers pass in the offensive zone and lifted a backhand pass Spencer Knight. And then at 10:18, Poulet ripped in his first of the year as Carl Castles found him charging to the net. In the second, Ryan McAllister beat Marcus Kroner. Ardey deflected point that shot, but Severin would push the Barracuda's lead back to 2 As he snapped in a short side shot from the left wing at 14:40 while short-handed. In the third, a Bordelot went upstairs on night at 5:28 to make it 4-1. And then Bailey sealed the deal with the win as the puck bounced off of him and in to make it 5-1. So a split series result over the Shark Trackers in their first visit to Texas City Arena, and of course their first visit to Stars Lake since the 15-16 season. Let's look at when the when we will be going to the Checkers. Let's look it up. Oh, our next home game is against Calgary coming in December, so that's our next opportunity to get those first home wins over Calgary. They'll be on the next show. Ah, it's not till January. So it's not till January when we go to the Checkers. So it's a back-to-back on January the 16th and January the 17th. Both of those are 4 p.m. Pacific times. That's where we'll be going to see the Charlotte Checkers. Hopefully this was not their only ever visits to Texas U Arena. Right, so we can now get back on track. As we go to the 17th, a back-to-back as the Colorado Eagles host the Colorado Eagles, a 5-2 mulling. The Raccoons fell behind by a pair of goals in the first period on Friday at Hoxie Arena and could never recover, falling 5-2 to the Colorado Eagles. In that loss, just played many back-to-back games with a goal, and Austin Wimblatt notched his first in his last six. In the opening 20, at 3:07, the Eagles jumped out to a 1-0 lead when Riley Tuff led a pass to Ben Myers on a 2-on-1, and the sophomore forward swiped it home at 8-on-1. On Colorado's first power play, Oscar Olsson made it goals in consecutive games and extended their Eagles lead to 2-0. The Raccoons would cut the deficit to in half with 2 minutes and 46 seconds remaining in that first period, as Bailey poked in a loose puck on the power play after Henry Fun had hit the post just moments prior. In the second, the Eagles would get the only goal of the frame. It was just 25 seconds into that period. Not a good way to concede there. Myers blasted in a one timer. In the third, America would get some life from its fourth line. And once that would be the beneficiary of those efforts, as he received a pass in the middle from Brett Kemp and snapped a shot past Justin Almond. At 7:31, the America thought they had it tied later in the period, but the Nick C6 bid was weighed off due to goaltend interference, and the Eagles would steal the deal with a hat-trick empty netter from Myers and another empty netter from Keaton Middleton. So 25 hours later, again the Barracuda would score two again, but this time came away with at least a point, so it's an overtime loss 3-2. They raised two goal hole on Saturday at Texas Arena, but would eventually fall 3-2 in the overtime period to the Eagles. In that overtime defeat, Bradley Marek would get his first in the AHL, and Todd Bordelot would bury his third of the year. In the first, Wyatt Almond would open the scoring at 16:13, so not quite early as we normally are seeing scoring from the current Eagles. They're a very fast team, Eagles. They do have to score quite early, so that's a bit odd there. On a wraparound, each team had a power play in the opening 20 minutes, but the game remained 1-0 Eagles after just one. In the second, Colorado would extend that lead to lead when Cal Burke snapped a 32-game goalless drought at 14:03. So again, not scoring as early as the Eagles normally do. But after relentless pressure by the Barracuda's fourth line, Brett Kemp would spot Marek, and the rookie forward would snap it in on the short side to cut the lead back down to just one at 18:02. Spare that second there. In the third, on an add-on man rush, Bordelot would patiently hold onto the puck before ripping short past Justin Anyone to tie the score at 2-2. Laguna had a chance to take it in its first lead when Scott Severin was sprung on a breakaway coming out of the penalty box, but the Eagles netminder would turn him aside. So both San Jose clubs this past month have had break opportunities denied by some stern netminding. And the extra session during a delayed penalty but would fire a rebound off the end wall and in to seal the 3-2 winner. So no points there, so no wins there at all for the Eagles, but again, in terms of getting points, it's a little split there, but no, no. Right, November the 21st, as this massive homestand continues, great. November 21, a tight result against the San Diego Gulls, but it would be a 5-4 regulation win. Very close, very close. And the Barracuda held off the Gulls' comeback attempts to claim a 5-4 win on a Tuesday night at Texas Arena. It was a loss. The Gulls have now dropped 12 in a row. Not a great year for San Diego. But there you go, it's an up and down roller coaster season for the Ducks. So, yeah, anyway, tip for tat. Right, what's this game? Thomas Bordeleau. And Ethan Cardwell each recorded 3 points as the Barracuda collected their second win on the season long 7-game home. This is a very long homestand, 7 games, which is great. In the Barracuda's first power play and first shot, Bordeleau would rip in a Colcastle point shot that had been blocked at 5:46 to get things started. So I know you want to do it. One shot, one goal. Yeah, yeah. Despite getting outshot 12-6 in that first, the Barracuda would take that 1-0 lead into the intermission. And in the second, on the team's fourth power play, Jacob Pettersson widened a Leon Gwaki feed from between the circles at the 7-minute mark. And then 27 seconds later, Brandon Coral stole the puck from Olin Zellweger of the Gulls and backhanded in Zaza's third and the ninth. So far, so good. Real dominance blow. This is when obviously things then turn, as the Gulls would then get on the board on the power play. Thor Barracuda captain, I can't believe we let him go, and Dragozino cashed in, but Bordeleau would complete a give and go with Cardwell to make it 4-1 at 15:07, and then Cardwell would swipe in a Pearson pass at 18:34 to make it 5-1 and kind of re-establish that dominance, I should say. The 4-goal man second period was a new season high for Sarzai. But in the third, this is when things got very interesting. Dominance sort of, I don't know if you can maybe argue this, but could have taken the foot off the gas, but should not have got that close, especially a team like San Diego who are playing the way they are right now. The Gulls would score 3 unanswered goals, including a goal from Trevor Carrick with 70 seconds left, but the Barracuda would find a way to hold on for a 5-4 win. And then we have another back-to-back to finish off the homestand against the Ontario Reign. Not great results here. The first one over the 24th was a 3-0 shutout loss. They did outshoot the Ontario Reign 32-23 on Friday night at Texas Arena, but failed to beat veteran goaltender David Rittich. And with 4-3-0. No, that's not sound like a swear word. Don't go there, you dirty animals. Limit 4-3-0. I know what you're thinking, but just don't. For the Reign, it was their third consecutive shutout victory. Woo! Reign playing hot right now. In the first, after the Barracuda were called on for a delayed game, Sam Fagamo, that's not Rudy Eber, stop it. I'm not going to pronounce Les Eber, so don't make this worse. Anyway, he ripped a shot off the goal for the post and in from the left wing to open the scoring at 11:50. For Sam, I'm not going to go there with the sound again. It was his fifth goal in his last three, and the Barracuda were only able to generate four shots in that first period alone, which matches a season low, and the Reign would take their 1-0 lead into the intermission. The second Barracuda outshot the Reign 50-8, so they managed to find a lot more pucks to the net. Had the only power play just 29 seconds into the period, but failed to even the scoring. Then the final 20, all hell breaks loose as the Reign extends its lead when Alex took Cotty tit in. That's not a biscotti. Oh, that rhymed. Tit in a Brandon Clark. There you go. A name that's not sounds silly or rude. So 24 seconds into the frame, the Barracuda would outshot the Reign 30-8 in that period, but couldn't solve the Reign's netminder. And at 18:28, TJ Tonnen would seal the deal with an empty netter. 24 hours later, the Barracuda do get on the ball, but still fall to a score of 4-2. Actually, they even led 2-0 on Saturday and put 4 shots on the net, but failed to hold their lead and would eventually fall 4-2 to Ontario Reign. With that win, Ontario has now won 4 in a row and has points in their last 8 contests. In the loss, Jacob Pettersson notched his second goal in his last 3 games, and David Gushnin snapped a 5-game goalless drought. In the first, on the Barracuda's first shot, Pettersson fired in the game's opening goal. So again, I knew I'd do it. One shot, one goal. As he deflected off a Reign defender to face them. At 8:09, Gushnin swiped in the Barracuda's second as the Reign failed to secure it and get the whistle. So they would finish the period by outshooting the Reign 16-7 and carried that 2-0 lead into the intermission. But then things went sour, because basically from that point on, the Reign then scores 4 unanswered goals. He's back again, 1:48 into the second, Sam Fagema. Never pronounced that right either, but just stop, go, don't go there. Instead, his goal streak to 5 and his point streak to 6 as he wrapped in Ontario's first of the afternoon. Then late in the frame, he would bag the tying goal 8-8 from below the goal line. In the third, at the tail end of the Barracuda's power play, the Reign would rush up ice on the 2-on-1 and Akil Thomas would rip in the go-ahead goal to make it 3 to Ontario at 1:37. And the Reign would seal the deal with a Brandon Clark empty netter at 19:32. Ontario's Eric Portillo, who allowed 2 goals on the first 4 shots he saw, would make 40 consecutive saves to earn the win. And then finally, number 29 in Coachella. Mark this day, you can't, in your memory banks. First ever win over the Firebirds. It was this, I felt, was like, this was long, long overdue. I mean, we talked about this last year. You can go back and listen to the Cuda Callers from our fifth Urban Odyssey season. We talked about it a lot last year, how both the Wranglers and Firebirds were just literally outshining all expectations there. The Wranglers, I thought we never really got a good foothold last year, but with the Firebirds, we had plenty of games where it came so close. Even the one that I saw in March to finish off my trip, that was one where you gave us like 5 extra minutes and we would have got the deal done. And we did come close last month, but didn't there. But I'm pleased to say it's happened. The Barracuda notched a season high 3 power play goals and were able to hold off a late Firebirds comeback on Wednesday night at Akershaw Arena for a 5-3 win. The victory, of course, the Barracuda's first ever over the Firebirds in what was 11 attempts. Yeah, because remember, we've had 8 games with the Firebirds last season. And we had 2 already this year, so I'm not sure how we've got against the Reign Western Conference champions this year. But that is in the bank. And same with Calgary, just now need to beat them on home soil, but that will come. Right, let's get into it, shall we? Leon Wahi led the way as he collected his 4th career 3-point night, and Thomas Bordelot And Jack Patterson and Nathan Todd all finish with 2 points each. In the first, on the first power play of the night, the Firebirds open the scoring, so you think, oh, here we go again. When Devin Shaw ripped in a touchdown shot at 13:39. In the second, the Barracuda Spurs power play, Daniel Gushin would wire in the tying goal just 18 seconds into the advantage. Then, on a 5-on-3 man advantage, Todd snapped 11-game goals drought by tipping through a borderline shot from the midpoint at 19:20. 9 seconds into the third period, the Barracuda extended that lead to 3-1 as got Wilkie blasted a point shot past Chris Drieger. Still a couple of leaves with the Firebirds, not with the Kraken. Snapping a 9-game goalless drought while collecting his third power play point at 5:59. Scott Severin scooped the puck through Drieger's 5 hole to make it 4-1. Barracuda. And the Firebirds would then make things interesting. They scored a pair of goals to cut the lead back down to just 1. First it was Logan Morrison during what was a delayed penalty, and then Cameron Hughes on a power play. So his specialty is not doing great here. And then they go and pull the extra attacker, but the Barracuda would seal that deal when Patterson found the empty net from his own end zone. Ito Mokmanni made 31 saves to earn his first win of the year, and Drieger, who's currently 6-5-0, allowed 5 goals and 35 shots, suffering his first loss against the Barracuda in 5 games. And like I mentioned, first ever win over the Firebirds. Oh, it's finally happened. Oh, God. Oh. In fact, when do we next see the Firebirds at Texas U? When do we next see them? We know we see Calgary next month, so that will be coming on the next month show. When do we next see the Firebirds on home soil? Let's look it up. Oh, it's not till way after the All-Star Classic. It's February the 21st. That's a 7 p.m. Pacific time face-off. So, oh, quite a while before we get our next chance to best the Firebirds at Texas Arena. Yeah, so quite a wait to go, but yeah. And then let's look up when real quickly, just fixing my episode notes. There we go. You always think you got it all set up and then you do the show and then right, so February the 21st, that's the next opportunity we'll have to beat the Firebirds on home soil. If that fails, the next opportunity will then be on March the 2nd, which is a 6 p.m. Pacific face-off. And then that'll be it. So we've only got 2 more opportunities to try and beat the Firebirds on home soil. I think for the Wranglers, those 2 games in December will be our only opportunity to get a win over the Wranglers on home soil. Oh no, we're seeing them again. Wow. So we're seeing the Wranglers 8 times this year. Wow, we only saw them 4 times last year. 2 in Calgary, 2 in San Jose. Oh, so plenty of opportunities to try and get that first home win over the Wranglers this year. Wow, just not me against the Firebirds. Okay, right. Wow. Okay, right. Well, there you go. But hopefully, they'll get it done in December, either the 15th or the 16th, and we can talk about it on the next show. So, yeah. So, right. So an interesting one there, lost split results, but hey, to get those first wins over both the Wranglers and the Firebirds, just that is, for me, a mini celebration we should take away from this month on Cooler Corner. Alright, it's now time to continue the look backs for the month of November. Okay, so we are picking up on November 16th, back on home ice to take on Blues, a 5-1 win for the Sharks. Just an amazing display here from Zaza. Mike Hoffman, he led the Sharks' offensive charge here, scoring two of Saturday's 5 goals. As for once this season, the Sharks were on the right side of a multi-goal scoreline. I mean, we've seen lots of multi-goal scorelines so far this season already. This month alone, the Sharks were on the wrong side of. This time, they feel what it's like to be on the offensive end of that scoreline. The Blues just weren't really clicking at all. They're having a very, very weird, strange season this year. They're hanging around in the fourth place in the Central, but they're not challenging enough to right now to cement that position and get a wild card spot. So we'll see how that goes going forward. But yeah, it's amazing and great to see that secondary scoring, you know, from Kajak winning, Eklund getting there, Luke Myth has a goal as well. As as what we saw with the Sharks was some aggression, speed, and the way they control things as well. That because these have been things that have been lacking, which kind of makes the Blues goal just a sad blemish, you know, on what was a brilliant display of hockey there in the tank. I mean, Kaapo Kähkönen was so close to getting that shot out, and it would have been great if he could have got that shot of it, because the Sharks played excellent, and that one goal, yeah, it's only one, but when you come to do my job, you break it down, you go, that's the one thing that could have changed, no, but a great display nonetheless. Okay, so then the Sharks get a couple of days rest before they head back out to Vancouver on November the 20th. Canucks 3, Sharks 1. And after playing a role in the raw possession, yes, we'll mention that on the stats, we've talked about that on the teleport bit. He was the one that got the lone goal for Team Teal. It was on a power play, so the power play is really improving for Zaza, which is good. Something that proved to be iffy after Vancouver's second goal of the night. It was scored shorthanded. So they gave up on the power play, but again got one back on the power play. So it's a little bit iffy though for me, the power play that game. And although it didn't. They did not concede on the penalty kill. That's the thing here. Things happened here. They did not concede on the penalty kill. Yeah, you gave it a short and a goal, but you did not concede on the penalty kill for a change. The positives here, it was a lot more closer the last time these two sides met. You know, because the last time these two sides met, of course, was that big 10-1 blowout. So, a lot closer. Yeah, they got one goal, but it was a lot more close this time. Vancouver wasn't as quick and as fast as we saw them at the start of the month.
If like me, you look at the game statistics as a whole, for the first time this season, the Sharks were evenly matched with their opponents. That was very, very great to see that as well. So then on the 22nd, a big blowout loss to the Seattle Kraken. We still have yet to win in Climate Pledge. Luckily though, this year we've got 4 matchups with the Krakens. We've got another shot later on in the season. Not too sure when that is, but we've got another chance. It will come eventually. It will come. I mean, the Barracuda managed to finally get their first wins over the Wranglers and the Firebirds this month. So the Sharks' first win over in Climate Pledge Arena will come eventually. I wasn't too pleased about this one. So it was a 7-1. Now, in the first few minutes, both sides here had grade A side chances again, that first goal of the game, both the Sharks and the Kraken. But of course, it would be the Kraken who struck first. And they really showed offense and tenacity here, as well as speed. So, which is, I think amazing given how this is only their third year. The way the Kraken played that game, it was almost like they've been around for 10 years, 15 years, not 3. Was quite amazing, and who knows, maybe this is what we'll see maybe when we get to 10, 50 years time and the Kraken have established themselves as a franchise in Seattle, who knows. They were on fine form here, amazingly well. We did see something new in this game though from Zaza. a timeout and a coach's challenge in the same sequence. Because it was 2-0. Because I think it was where the crowd thought it was going to be 2-0. Sharks took the timeout. And then after the timeout, we had the goal was called off, was called back because it was offside. Like, when did that happen? When did Debbie Quinn find time to do a coach's challenge and all that? So that is something I don't think I've ever seen in nearly 15 years of being involved with the Sharks and this league. So that's a first for me. It's like, whoa! But again, like we saw a couple of times this month alone, didn't make that much of a difference because at the end of the day, it was still a 7-1 blowout. So, yeah. How Mike Hoffman was able to rain on Seattle's parade to prevent them getting a shutout victory. So, a little positive there. Right, we then go back to the tank for Black Friday. How was everyone's Thanksgivings? Lovely, good, great, perfect. Now, it was a busy Black Friday in the AHL. A lot of teams had back-to-backs for Black Friday and the following Saturday. We were one of them. As for our opponent, the next thing ranked the Canucks. This was a really bizarre, though, face-off for Sarze, and particularly for the Pacific Coast. 12:30 Pacific time. So around about lunchtime. That's all. I mean, we've had the odd 1 p.m., 2 p.m. starts in RSA. That's understandable, but really? Lunchtime? And on Black Friday? Are you mad? Anyway, Mike Hoffman, on his birthday, he got the scoring started here. As I mentioned, it was a bizarre lunchtime face-off on Black Friday. But what I found amazing was how the Sharks managed to drive a lot more shots to net. The Sharks been great on this season, so it was great to see that. And they actually even managed to outshot their opponents, which I don't think is what we've seen yet this season. Well, the power play was just on fire. You know, we're excellent striking very quickly in that second period. However, they kind of let their lead slip, you know. The mistakes from last season, playing again, let the lead slip. And in the end, after 6 rounds in that shootout, Montreal would complete the comeback and claim the claim both points. But this, like the Colorado one, back at the start of the season, is one of those where you go look back at the end of the year. So we get to our season one, we'll look back and think, oh, that's one that maybe you should have had in the bag. So far this season, at least one game a month, it's been one where you really should have had one in the bag. Let's hope that's not going to be a trend going forward. Right. So 12 hours later, and the Sharks finally would get a win over Vancouver. 4-3. It was very close. So after winning a coach's challenge that I actually didn't think they had enough evidence on to win that one. The challenge was for goaltender interference. And whilst there was a little bit of contact, I just wasn't too sure there was actually enough evidence to say, yes, that's concrete, overturn the goal. They did get overturned. Great. That helps things out a little bit better. And it was the Sharks' young prospects here that were on fire, creating such beauties of goals. They really were. So you had Ty Emerson getting his first NHL goal. So, whoop, whoop, whoop! By Fabian Zetterlund, just proving to be a viable asset acquired in that team of my trade. I mean, I did say, you know, last season that some of those pieces we acquired could potentially one day maybe be viable, and Fabian Zetterlund is proving to be a viable asset. If you look at where New Jersey is right now, they're nowhere where they expect to be, and yet they took Team Amir off us. So I think anybody who felt that that was a bad trade last year, you might well start rethinking that, because Fabian Zetterlund is proved to be quite a viable asset, and what a coup it would be if we could keep him for a good couple of years and he'd grow to a great player. So yeah, look more. It's all about looking for those next gen Sharks that are gonna take the team forward, and he could maybe well done, but so he did great there. And we also Mikael Granlund getting his first as a shark, while Mike Hoffman completed a perfect Thanksgiving weekend. Number 27, 2-1 with the Sharks and the Capitals. So the trends reversed this season, because normally in past season series, it's been in this matchup, it's always been the road team that wins games. So we always seem to manage to beat the Capitals at Capital One. They always seem to manage to beat us at SAP. It's never the other way around. And of course, this year, back in the end of October, we had the Sharks lose at Capital One. And here at the end of November, we've had the Capitals lose SAP Center. So the trend has reversed. We'll see how that, what happens next season, whether that continues or it goes back to the old days. But the Sharks really grinded their way to the win here. I mean, it was not easy. A very close game here. Bit of a dull one, because you know they had just each period, so they had one goal scored in each, which is a bit dull there. A little bit too much back and forth for my liking. But they managed to really, you know, get what over the Capitals firepower there. The special teams proved to be the difference here. Mainly the penalty kills. Luke Cullen made Washington pay on theirs, while Zaza's was perfect. And of course, that's something that I haven't really been able to say much about this season. In a game where only one goal got scored across each period. So period one, one goal, period two, one goal, period three, one goal. Bit dull, bit lame, bit back and forth, but yeah, sadly that's the way it went. Alright, and finally, remember the 30th to start the longest road trip of the Sharks season. Is it a balmy one though? Because it's stuck, because it's mainly in the east and it ends in the west. And it's going to pick up the bulk of it, actually. It's going to be talked about on the next show. Of course, we had a lot of that last season, didn't we? We did. We had a lot of that last year in season 5. We had one episode start in the middle of a road trip. We did this beginning of the next one, picking up where we left off. Well, that's going to happen again in this. Again. Here in season 6. And I think it's similar time as well. So, spooky. Spooky coincidences. Spooky coincidences. Yeah, this is our longest road trip. Got 3 original 6 teams. Got the New York area, except for Buffalo. And we finish it in Vegas. So, not really a balmy road trip, because the Vegas matchup's not in the middle. But, yeah. We can never see it happen. All Eastern road trip or an all Western road trip. Always has been one from the opposite conference to sort of just scupper it. Anywho's, let's get on to that. A 3-0 shutout with the Bruins. So we still haven't yet to beat Boston for the first time in a very long while. Now, I'm going to do 2 quick positives about the Boston Bruins and I'll get back to the game. So 2 quick positives about the Bruins. Firstly, their jerseys. I mean, I've now seen Boston in both their roads and home jerseys this year. And I think you should keep them. I mean, I can't really tell Boston what to do with their franchise, but honestly, I think you should keep them because they are really, really gorgeous and definitely was about time Boston had changed. And the center ice as well. The new logo just looks so gorgeous on center ice, so I'd really hope they keep that. So 2 great possibilities about Boston there, which I had to say. In case I don't get another chance to do it next year, in case they switch back. So well, I get that now, just in case I don't get a chance to do it next year. But anyway, back to the game, because we're here to talk about games, not immunities. Let's talk about the game itself. So, I'm not really keen on the Sharks utilising the new helmet rule. Who the hell came up with that rule? I mean, seriously, is this what these come to? So, how does this make sense? We're not allowed to have theme night jerseys, but we are allowed to wear our coloured helmets with our road jerseys. How does that make sense? Answers on the postcard, please, or at treportpodcast@gmail.com. Answer the postcard. How does that make sense? Ugh. Anyway. Of course, it is a hockey fight. Cancel tonight. A little ceremony before the game, and yet we're not allowed to have jerseys for them either, or tape, or you know. So come on, it's just double standards. Anyway, I'm sure this will And here's now is the problem with having a unique currency, because the rules are, with that helmet rule, is you can't wear your current helmet if you're on the road if the team you're visiting to uses them the same colours as home jerseys. So I'll give you an example. So say the Detroit Red Wings were visiting the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Carolina Hurricanes were wearing their red helmets, the Red Wings would not be allowed to wear their red helmets either. I know, it's balmy. That's an example. But oh my god, are we gonna really see the C3PO and R2-D2 bucket heads from Vegas and LA? Bloody hell. Right, onto the game itself. I thought the Sharks first period was great. They did really well in that first period, you know. They were winning battles, they controlled the puck beautifully, they kept it in Boston zone, something that we see the St. Louis Blues do exceptionally well at. They were really showing some really great chances. And then sadly, in the second period, it all fell apart because Boston pounced very, very quickly. And all that hard work just unraveled. Tempers played a lot in that second period as well, but a lot of handbags were thrown. But the big thing here for me, the big takeaway here, was how Thursday failed to capitalize on so many big opportunities on the power play is what let them down, including that 5-on-3. That could be the game changer, and yet, sadly, it was not. Alright, so our record of the month is a little bit better than last month, okay? It's 5-8-1. So, we finally got wins on the board. Yes! That's a good bit. Bad news, still bottom of the league. Yeah, I know. How Minnesota and Chicago are still above us? I do not know. Right, that leads us to finish off with the high points and the low points of the month. Right, high point out of the way first. I think that means fairly obvious. For me, my highlight of the month is going to be... It's going to be a game that I was able to pay attention to. It's November the 16th at the Blues, because obviously I couldn't pay attention to that because I had to get my beauty sleep, because I was going away on a weekend break the next day. So, but did pay attention to it. Have seen highlights, so... I just think for me, November 16th, that's going to be my high of the month. Now, it's very hard to choose a low point of the month when you have had two big blowouts back to back to start the month. So, the low points have got to be those two big massive losses against both Vancouver and Pittsburgh. So there's going to be two low points this month. In case you're just new to the show, yes, I can do that because it's my show, my rules. I have done at some point, I can't remember which season it was, but I have at some point chosen a loss as my highlight of the month because I felt the Sharks did have a lot of great effort in that particular loss. I can't remember which season it is, but I have done that before. So if any of you new listeners are thinking, oh, he's going rogue, not going rogue, it's my show, my rules. I can do whatever I like. So, I mean, the low points of the month are going to be the two big 10-goal losses to both Vancouver and Pittsburgh. You could maybe argue, if you were doing this yourselves, you could maybe argue the Pittsburgh one shouldn't really be counted because the Sharks, the one period, were great. But, yeah, they did get to 10 goals. So, I'm having both of them. But you might argue the Vancouver one should be the low one. But for me, they were both as bad as each other, okay? Neither one was worse than the other. They were both bad. If you're giving like 10 goals in the game, then they both deserve to be bad, and bad they were. You've been listening to Cheer Report, the podcast made by a fan for the fans, brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. For all the latest Cheer Report bits, subscribe to my official George Hand YouTube channel. Don't forget, we always would love to hear from our fans. You can email us at cheerreportpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear you, and we could bring out your messages on the show. And while you're at it, why don't you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review? Not only does it help boost our self-esteem, but it also helps new fans find our amazing and wonderful show. Well, until next time, all that means stays, and so I'll leave you now.